You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and when Rebecca Clayfish entered the race for governor, she was the presumed Republican frontrunner. But now, the former lieutenant governor is at risk of losing her primary campaign. As she closes out the race, she's reminding voters of the work she did with former Governor Scott Walker more than a decade ago now. As Sean Johnson reports, the question now is whether that will work.
There have been big events to run for governor that have not broken her way. But in the closing weeks of her primary campaign, there are little moments that have Clayfish feeling like it's 2010 all over again. During an interview at a recent GOP picnic in Verona, Clayfish gets interrupted from across the park, but in a good way.
You know, we put...
Thank you. Love you guys. Tell your friends August 9th, please.
Clayfish says moments like these remind her of her first run for office in 2010.
And there was a moment at which you could feel almost palpable momentum on the ground, and it's stuff like that.
2010 was the year Clayfish jumped headfirst into politics. She won a crowded GOP primary for lieutenant governor and joined Scott Walker's ticket. She was there in 2011 when Walker introduced Act 10, his landmark bill that all but eliminated public sector union rights. And they both survived historic recall elections in 2012.
Now this is what democracy looks like!
After Walker narrowly lost to Democratic Governor Tony Evers in 2018 and later announced he would not run in 2022, Clayfish became the presumed frontrunner. She's since been endorsed by a long list of Republican power brokers, including Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, the business giant Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and most prominently, Walker.
Hi, I'm Scott Walker. Please join me in voting for Rebecca Clayfish for governor. Rebecca stood with me as we took on the big government special interest and cut taxes.
With each endorsement has come an overt reminder that Clayfish was there a decade ago when Republicans won control of state government and fundamentally changed Wisconsin. Longtime GOP operative Brian Schimming says it's an effective way for Clayfish to remind voters of her record.
You know, there's a reason she's got him out front as much as she does, and that is he still is very powerful motivator with Republican primary voters and the grassroots, 100% name ID.
But Schimming says there are reasons Walker's support and Clayfish's record weren't enough to clear the field. Being lieutenant governor isn't quite the same as being governor, he says. There's also the old adage.
For some folks, it's the oldest thing in the book. That was then and this is now. And
the Republican Party of 2022 is different from the party of 2010. Walker and Clayfish won with a base of support in the suburbs. Republicans still turn out the vote there, but not by quite as much. Meanwhile, at least some GOP voters actively dislike all of Clayfish's establishment ties. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science at Carroll University in Waukesha.
Those who were standard bearers before are not necessarily in the positions that they had been in terms of what their endorsements mean, what kind of popularity they have.
Clayfish also missed out on the biggest endorsement when former President Donald Trump backed her opponent, construction executive Tim Michels. Michels, who only entered the race in April, has since spent millions of his own money on ads and shot up in the polls. But when asked why she wasn't able to put this race away earlier, Clayfish rejects the premise of the question.
Nobody's entitled to anything. Things must be earned, and there's no one who can outwork me.
That was who she was in 2010, Clayfish says. That's who she is now. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
WPR is running a series of profiles ahead of Wisconsin's August 9th primary election and will continue to profile Republicans running for governor this week. Next week, a series of profiles on Democrats running for the U.S. Senate. Now, from the land of Johnsonville, Usingers, Miesfelds, and so many more, it's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and you better know how to grill a brat. And we're here to help this hour, and we want to hear from you. I want to encourage you to share your most valued grilling secrets, because as you may find this hour, there may be a better way to grill. You just don't know it yet. And you don't want to find that out while you're cooking in your own backyard. So let's put your tips and tricks to the test this morning. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, ideas@WPR.org. Our guest, grilling guru Josh Swanson, executive chef for St. Norbert College in De Pere. Josh, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me, Lee. I'm really excited to be here.
And so I just, from your own story, your own experience, how did you cut your teeth at the grill? When did you begin? How did you take on the grill master role?
Well, I actually started in professional kitchens in the dish room at about 14. And I was efficient and enjoyed what I was doing and enjoyed the people I was working with. So I didn't wash dishes for too long. And they got me in the kitchen. And from there, it blossomed into a wonderful career. I think when it really, really hit me, I spent about 7 years working on a wood-fired grill and fine dining. And that really kind of gave me the love for working on a grill and outdoor cooking as well.
Yeah, no, 7 years. So when you cook in your backyard today, I've got to ask you right out of the gate, Josh, propane, pellets, or charcoal?
The simple answer would be yes. I've used all of these things. I do not have a pellet grill at home. Honestly, I think my favorite grill and most used grill is my basic Weber kettle grill. And I do have a propane grill. I have a Blackstone that's on propane. I've got a little burner called a King Cooker that's basically made for seafood boils, but I use it to sear meat in cast iron pans and those sorts of things that I also use. And then I've got a smoker at home as well. But I think the Weber charcoal kettle grill can accomplish all of those things that you would use those different pieces of equipment for. So I think that's your most versatile tool.
So if I were just starting out of the gate, I wouldn't want to jump right into the propane and propane accessories. That kettle charcoal grill like a Weber would be a great start and pretty cost feasible too.
I think that a Weber kettle would be a great start, but you know, there's always fun for propane and propane accessories.
Well, from your perspective then, Josh, as you've been behind the grill, a wood-fired grill for 7 years, and then you take it to your backyard, and now you're the executive chef at St. Norbert's College, what are the differences between cooking with propane versus charcoal? How do you size them up?
Well, charcoal, you got to be a little bit more measured because you're going to kind of set your level of heat by controlling the flow of oxygen. With propane, you can simply turn the gas up or down. So I think for some beginners, propane might be a little bit more attractive, but you're not going to get that real full grill flavor. It's very difficult to smoke on a propane grill. You know, and then there's the pellet grills out there that, in my experience of working with them, they're not a really great smoker and they're not a really great grill. So they're kind of in between, whereas that Weber kettle, I can set that up to smoke a pork shoulder in it if I want to,
sure.
Or I can get it ripping hot and make a caveman steak right on the coals, you know, so it gives me a lot more options.
A direct flame steak?
Yeah, you can. What you do is you take a hairdryer and blow off any of the kind of ash from the charcoal, and then you put the steak right on that charcoal, and it's kind of, they call it caveman style. You get a really nice sear, and what happens when you're cooking, you know, meat over fire, whether that be propane or natural gas or charcoal, is when those meat juices hit the fire, that's what actually kind of creates that reaction that makes you as a caveman go, meat's good, yeah. You know, and want to eat that. So getting it right on those coals really kind of creates a unique situation.
So propane, yes. Charcoal, yes. Pellets, Josh, what could be the benefits of owning a pellet grill?
Pellet grills are very, very energy efficient. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to use a lot of fuel, so that's a nice thing. It does have, I will say for a grill, it does have a little bit nicer smoky flavor than, say, using a propane grill. You know, and they are very easy to control. So you can dial your temperature in and stay right at that temperature. So there are definitely some advantages to it, you know, and I've used them in the past, just not personal preference for me.
Josh Swanson's executive chef at St. Norbert College and a grilling guru in his own right. And we're challenging your grilling tips and tricks this morning to find out if they really are the best practices in your backyard. Because you want to, you know, serve, right? So if you've got your suggestions for Josh or you want to see what he thinks about how you roll and with your grill, whether it's propane, pellets, or charcoal, join us, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Veggies on the grill, fish on the grill. What's the best way to get it done in the way that pleases everybody in your backyard this summer? It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're picking up our conversation about grilling and outdoor cooking with Josh Swanson, executive chef of St. Norbert College in De Pere. And we invite you to bring your questions and favorite grilling tips to the table this morning with us at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And by the way, at WPR.org/mornings, you will find some of the recipes we're talking about with our guest, Josh, this morning. And Josh, without any tips or suggestions from calls this morning, I'd like to dive into one of these recipes of yours. And you know, when I think about cooking red meat on the grill, maybe a ribeye, maybe a T-bone, but you've got a recipe for us this morning on our website for a tri-tip. Tell us about this.
Indeed. So I think a tri-tip's an underutilized cut, you know, across the rest of the country outside of California. And it's a cut that I very much enjoy. And it's a little bit trickier to find sometimes. You got to talk to your butcher and got to make friends, you know. But I love them. And at the college, we get in a tri-tip from Aspen Ridge Beef, which is one of the few certified humane beef programs in the country. Not only that, but they're all black Angus. And it grades out. It would easily grade out as prime. You know, it's got a nice amount of marbling to it. So that kind of inspired me for this recipe and to use tri-tip. Tri-tip's like it's almost like a roast. You grill like a steak. So what I like to do with them is kind of, it's true. You kind of do what's called a reverse sear, where you'll build up your fire on one side of the grill, your heat source, and then you'll put the piece of meat, the seasoned piece of meat on the opposite side. So what you're actually going to do is you're going to kind of bring the temperature of the meat up to where close to where you want it to be before you put it over that direct heat. So I'll get it close to maybe 120 degrees or so, and then get that other side of the grill really nice and hot and rotate that tri-tip over there and get some real good color on it. Some of that Maillard reaction that makes you go, then, you know, pull it off when it gets to your desired temperature. For me, that's probably around 130 to 135 degrees. You want to pull it a little bit earlier than it hits that temp because it's going to, you know, carry over. Let it rest. At my house, I don't really serve steaks like you kind of get in a restaurant where each diner gets their own steak. What I like to do is I like to cook a larger piece of meat if possible, or even if I'm doing ribeyes or something like that, I put it on a cutting board. Put a little dressing on that cutting board, you know, a little seasoning, maybe it's some garlic and herb butter, maybe it's a little bit of olive oil and black pepper, you know, whatever you like. And then let that steak rest for a little bit and then slice it. And then kind of everybody can get their piece. In my household, there's medium people and there's medium rare people. And we split about 50-50. So this way I'm able to accomplish, you know, both goals for each diner. But I slice that piece of beef out and then everybody can kind of pick and choose their own adventure.
Let's go to your tips and suggestions this morning at 1-800-642-1234. And a reminder that that tri-tip and Napa salad recipe from Josh can be found at our website at WPR.org/mornings. Marion Rubicon, you are on the air with Josh Swanson. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Josh. Hey, I have got, a couple of years ago, I had way too many tomatoes for my garden. So I put them on my Weber grill and using a bunch, I tried all different flavors of wood chips to throw in there for smoking, and I made a sauce out of it using a little jalapeno, after I grilled the tomatoes, I put them in my food processor and made a sauce out of it. Oh, my goodness, it's wonderful.
What'd you use the sauce for?
I wrote down the recipe.
Yeah. What'd you use the sauce for?
Oh, man, you can use it for anything. We like it over chicken. You can use it as a dipping. It's just a wonderful smoky tomato.
So
go ahead. I emulsified it with a little olive oil.
Yes.
Jalapeno, you know, just a few different herbs, and it just turned out great.
Mary, thank you so much. And Josh Swanson, making tomatoes on the grill, getting a smoky flavor, building a sauce with an emulsion of olive oil and jalapenos. I wish I would have had breakfast before this interview.
That does sound excellent. It actually reminds me to being a younger cook and being shown kind of a similar technique by a chef where we smoked some tomatoes and made a sauce. So excellent use of some extra garden tomatoes. And, you know, that season's coming up. I'm getting excited. I've got some green ones out there, and pretty soon we'll have some really nice tomatoes.
So bigger picture here then, in general terms, Josh, when you talked about the caveman sear earlier and then the indirect heat and the reverse sear of your tri-tip, where you place food on the grill can affect how it cooks, whether it's red meat or whether it's red tomatoes. So how can grilling with direct or indirect heat alter that cooking process?
Well, it's really kind of what you want to, you know, what you want to eventually get to. I really do enjoy the indirect heat where you kind of almost use the grill like a convection oven. Yeah. You've got that kind of, the way that you set up the venting, it's forcing the heat kind of to kind of spin around in there almost like a fan would do in a commercial convection oven in a kitchen. And anybody can tell you that's a really efficient method for cooking. So I like doing that. And then I also really enjoy being able to go right over that heat and have that fun, you know, that grilling moment where you're standing there with the tongs and, you know, you're the Hank Hill of the world, slapping that meat on there and getting a little sear on it and being the master of the grill. So there's a lot of different methods that you can do to grilling and outdoor cooking. You know, I don't know if you've seen the documentary on Netflix with Francis Mallmann, but he's a famous South American chef that just grills everything to putting whole animals on spits and letting them just slow roast. You know, they do a lot of lamb down there and they'll do it that way. So there's so many ways that you can cook. And as the caller mentioned, you know, a few tomatoes from the garden, it's easy. It doesn't have to be meat, you know. Yeah. You can do a lot of vegetarian cooking. I love mushrooms on the grill. This time of year, you can go to any of our mini farmers markets and get some, you know, locally grown mushrooms. I've even seen some things like, lately I've seen lion's mane mushroom at farmers market, which is really cool. Yeah. My favorite is a maitake. I like to get a maitake mushroom on the grill, but there's many options there. And, you know, it's the time of year. I think there's probably some folks that are listening to have some zucchinis at home.
Mm-hmm.
Not much better to do with a zucchini than a little bit of olive oil, nice, healthy amount of black or red pepper. I like the red chili flake, a little spicy,
mm-hmm.
And just let it, you know, a little bit of salt and put it right on that grill and get that little bit of char on it. And man, is that great. It's not only good hot coming right off the grill, but you can take that and a couple of bell peppers, char those two up and, you know, chop them up and serve them, kind of mix them together as a salad cold. Ooh. And that's just amazing. You know, we do that. We actually do that at the college. We do a grilled and chilled veggie platter, and it's one of our most popular catering items that we put out. And it's great because you can check a lot of boxes. You know, if you have any vegetarians or vegans, you have an item that's readily available to them, but it doesn't, you're not discouraging anyone at St. Norbert Wall about being inclusive and including everyone. And that's one of the ways that we can make a delicious dish that is able to include everyone.
Josh Swanson, executive chef at St. Norbert College. And Josh, when we're talking about these vegetables on the grill, you do have a grill master's secret ingredient for vegetarian and vegan grillers. What is it?
There is a secret ingredient. It's actually a sauce called yondu. For those that aren't familiar, there's something that's like a little ninja trick for chefs. It's called fish sauce and it's fermented anchovies. All the ingredients are anchovies, salt and water and thyme. And it gets this funky. I'm going to be honest with you. It doesn't smell great when you open that bottle, but it's got a similar, you know, umami effect to like soy sauce. And when you use it in recipes, it just transforms into this, another more beautiful thing. And I was looking for something similar when making, you know, vegan and vegetarian recipes. And I kind of, through a podcast I listened to, actually, I stumbled across this product called yondu. It turns out I had actually purchased yondu from the Boone Asian market in Chicago years ago, but it was all in, you know, writing that I didn't understand or couldn't read. I don't know if it's in Mandarin or what, but it was like, it's almost like a soy sauce plus, right? But it doesn't have just that real salty edge. It's got this real round umami flavor. Yeah. So I discovered that they actually started marketing this in the U.S. as a product called yondu. So it's a process of the kind of soy sauce making process or miso making process.
And how do you treat your veggies? Liquid. How do you treat your veggies with it?
So it's just a seasoning. All you would do is take veggies, put them in a bowl, sprinkle a little bit of this liquid yondu on them, kind of similar how you use a soy sauce. Let it soak in for a minute or two, and then just go. And you can cook in any way that you want, utilizing this. But it's going to bring you. It's kind of like a good chef years ago told me that soy sauce is like liquid salt, right? Well, yondu is like liquid salt plus. It's just got so much more going on than just salt.
Can you oversalt then? Because I've had that problem at the grill before.
You can definitely oversalt when using something like yondu. I would personally use any salt. You know, otherwise I like to use a good flaky salt because I can get a pinch in my hand. I'm not a big fan of the real fine salt unless I'm making a sauce or vinaigrette, in which case I might use like a fine sea salt that would dissolve quickly.
I hope you are taking notes this hour for the next time you are in the backyard grilling and somebody refers to you as the grill master, whether it's red meats or veggies. We've got tips for you and Yondu sauce now on the list as well. What are your tips and suggestions for grilling? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation with our guest, Josh Swanson. He's the executive chef of St. Norbert College and a grilling guru in his own right. So those secrets that you have, share them this morning and let's find out whether or not they're the best practices in grilling when it comes to grilling in your backyard. I'm Lee Rayburn, and your news is next here on the Ideas Network. Google Trends, Wisconsinites search online for charcoal 8 times more than propane. It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kenton. Which grill do you swear by? Maybe it's the big green egg? What? We're challenging you to bring us your best grilling practices this morning so we can put them to the test with our expert, Josh Swanson, who's the executive chef of St. Norbert College in De Pere. We invite you to join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org. And before we get to Dwayne in Wausau, just a quick follow-up here for you, Josh. A lot of folks asking where we can find this Yondu sauce that you put on your veggies, this soy sauce plus, plus, plus. Where can we pick it up?
I actually bought it at the, I think it's the Boon Ju Asian market in Chicago, but you can get it on the internet. You know, the bigger retailers out there, if you just search up Yondu, it is available pretty easy by mail order.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I might have saw it at a Woodman's recently as well.
Oh, wow.
I would always, Woodman's is kind of one of my go-tos for some of those unique things if you can't find them. Otherwise, you know, Wisconsin is peppered with a lot of wonderful Asian markets. I've got several of them up in Green Bay area here. So I'd say, hey, you know, stop out at your local Asian market and maybe pick up a thing or two that you've never had before while you're looking for this sauce.
Thank you for that. Now let's go to Dwayne in Wausau, standing by with his grilling tips at 1-800-642-1234. Dwayne, good morning. You're on the air with Josh Swanson.
Well, good morning. So I've never had, you know, I'm 60 and I've never had a gas grill, but a lot of people, if you have like 2 or 3 people in your house, maybe even up to 4, they have these huge kettle grills and you can get by with a small Smoky Joe Weber, a couple handfuls of charcoal when they're those huge deep kettle grills. It's just a colossal waste of charcoal to do a few hamburgers or a couple steaks. But those towers work really nice if you don't want to use fluid. You just crumble up a piece of paper underneath and you put the charcoal on top. And also my question was about how long, I like letting my steaks thaw in the fridge, but then room temperature before they go on the grill. You know, you gotta be careful. You can't do that with chicken, obviously. But, and then I, another thing is I use this Cavender's Greek seasoning. It's, you know, the oregano and spices in it, but that's kind of a good seasoning for steaks if you want to throw some of that on. But and how do you spell Yondu if I use fish sauce?
The spelling of Yondu, Josh, we'll start with that.
Sure. It's kind of just like it sounds. Yondu.
Mm-hmm. It's the sort of grilling tip and secret that you want to keep to yourself and yet at the same time share with everybody. But also mentioning Cavender's Greek seasoning, the Greek seasoning from Cavender's on steak. What do you season your steak with, Josh?
I'm mostly a salt and pepper person.
Okay.
You know, I think I have some of that Greek seasoning in my cupboard. And if I memory sparks me correctly, I like to put it on fries or we do, you know, some chicken with it. Mm-hmm. It is a delicious seasoning and I'm pretty sure it contains MSG, which, you know, makes things delicious. So they sneak that into a few things and I'm here to tell you the MSG myth is not true. That's been debunked. You know, it's a good thing to eat. It's okay to have in your food. Just like everything else, you don't want to have way too much sodium. So it's more important to watch how much sodium you're using. You know, MSG, it's okay.
And you spent 7 years at the restaurant with a wood-fired grill, and I would ask you about letting your red meat come to room temperature before putting it on that grill like Dwayne does. What do you think about that?
I think when you're at home and you've got the time to do it, it definitely helps the meat come up to temperature a little bit more gently.
Okay.
You know, it can't hurt at all to let it sit out for a little bit. I think you need to, you know, remember food safety and make sure that anytime you're out of that, you know, in between that 35 to 40 degree range, and then once you're below that 135 to 140 degree range, you're in what's called the temperature danger zone. Mm. So you want to be conscious of that, you know, and you want to not have anything go past 4 hours in that danger zone area. But outside of that, a nice piece of meat, you know, we're very blessed in our area in that we have really, really high quality meat. Not, you know, the whole country doesn't have that, and the whole world doesn't have that. So we're very fortunate, and our meat is often very fresh. It's well cared for. We have a really robust butchery program in the state. So if you're buying your steaks locally, chances are you're getting a really nice high quality steak. Honestly, I'd feel pretty comfortable with most of those steaks eating them raw, you know, making a carpaccio or a beef tartare or that sort of thing because of the care, you know, that goes into that.
Josh Swanson, executive chef at St. Norbert's College, taking your recommendations for the grill this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Cooking in your backyard this summer? Let's put your tips and tricks to the test. Ross joins us now from Crawford County. Ross, you're on the air with Josh Swanson.
Hi, Lee. Hi, Josh. So the question I have regarding my Weber grill, putting the charcoal on the one side and leaving the other side sort of for the indirect, and I'm putting my meat on that the opposite side of the coals, and then I think my brain gets a little bit muddled. And what I mean is that sometimes I think, oh, I'm smoking the meat, and so it'll be on the one side, and I think, oh yeah, I'm kind of smoking it. And then it sounds like what Josh is saying is that really what you're doing is you're just kind of slowly heating it up before you put it on the other side. Oftentimes the problem I have when I look at the meat, it looks brown on the outside, and I swear I put a temperature probe into it, but it oftentimes comes out undercooked. But the question I'd like, it's clarifying this idea of indirect heat versus smoking on a Weber grill.
Ross, thank you. Josh?
Yeah, excellent feedback. I'd like to point out, too, that he mentioned using a thermometer.
Yep.
That's a tip I gave to my uncle years ago, and he reminds me every time he sees me almost that was one of the best things I ever told him. You know, if you're cooking meat on a grill, if you use a thermometer and you cook to temperature, not to time, you're going to end up with a lot better product. So it sounds like he's well on his way to rocking that grill. The difference between smoking and kind of that indirect heat. So smoke is really a slow and low process. So typically you're talking about anywhere, you know, temperature. You could be cold smoking at a refrigerator temperature if you're doing things like cheese. But if you're doing like a pork shoulder, I do a lot of pork shoulders. My preferred temperature is 236. So I like to get that smoker sitting right in that 236 degree range. And I find that gives me a really good smoked product. So that slow and low, what it does is it really gets the smoke penetrating into the meat. It lets that meat cook slow. It also tenderizes it. You're taking a cut like a pork shoulder that's got a lot of connective tissue in it, and you're breaking that down by bringing it to a final temperature of 195 to 205 degrees if you want a really soft product. So it's really, it's a slow and low. I think I usually do about 13 hours for those guys. But if you're doing kind of that indirect heat where you're doing that reverse sear technique, you're not looking for that slow and low. You're not looking to break down a lot of connective tissue. You know, you might be wanting to finish with a mid rare or medium finish. So it's really a much different cooking technique in that you'll have a much higher temperature. I'd say you're probably, I don't know, I'm rolling it easily 400 to 450 degrees sometime.
Okay.
On that other side of the grill, I like to get the grill nice and hot for that indirect cooking. I've had people where I've seen methods where you do keep it around 300 degrees and really let it go for a long time. I made a tri-tip on the grill while I mowed the lawn the other day. You know, I threw it on that side of the grill. I kind of closed my vents up, so I, you know, just had them all a crack. So it took me about an hour to mow my lawn. And when I, you know, I checked it halfway through and checked it when I was done, and it was just about perfect. I opened all my vents up. I pulled my lid off. I got those coals going, blew on them a little bit, and moved that tri-tip over to the other side. And I got some real good color on there. And it was perfect. And I had dinner right after I got, you know, right off of the lawnmower. So quite lovely. But
yeah, what a great summer really day right there.
It is. I think that's really the difference, though, is that you're looking for two different finish outcomes and you're utilizing two very different cuts of meat. You know, barbecue is brisket, right? It's pork shoulder. It's ribs. All these things are slow and low cooking items. So like normally in the kitchen, you would braise these items or you'd cook them slow and low, like a roast, you know, and then for the indirect cooking, you're talking about ribeyes, tri-tips, hanger steaks, you know, sirloins, tenderloins, different things like that, where these are hot and fast cooking things. So it's just a little bit different way for those items where traditionally they've always been cooked hot and fast, to just kind of get a more even doneness throughout the meat. If you've ever cut into your steak and you have that real gray ring around the outside, and then the inside's that medium rare or medium that you really like, with the indirect cooking, that's where you can get almost like it's similar to an immersion circulated meat or sous vide, if you would, where it'll be, you know, that red color throughout the entire piece of meat with not so much of that gray circle around the outside. I think that's the kind of the desired effect there.
Yes. Josh Swanson, executive chef at St. Norbert's College, taking your grilling tips and suggestions and applying best practices to them. 800-642-1234 to join our conversation this hour. Mike in New London standing by. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I appreciate you taking my call. I was quality manager at Hillshire Farm in New London for many years, and so I really learned to appreciate the industrial level of cooking meats. But I have always been a fan of a large kettle Weber charcoal grill. A caller earlier had talked about, you know, doing smaller items on a Smoky Joe, so I've got one of those. So I've got the two different arsenals. Grills in my arsenal, you know, the smaller things like up to pork tenderloin and brats and burgers we do on the Smoky Joe direct heat. But I just love, I've traditionally done for over 25 years for my family, indirect hams for Easter, even though it's a fully smoked, fully cooked bone-in ham. I do that indirect. It takes 3 or 4 hours to get it where I want it, so it falls off the bone tender for Easter. Mm. And we do whole turkey every Thanksgiving with indirect heat with the two piles of coals on each side. And to me, I'd sum it up saying it's not just about the result. It's about the process.
Yes.
The enjoyment. And the just the fun of cooking, the joy of cooking, so to speak. And I'll take any comments off the air.
Yeah,
thank you.
Mike, thank you. A whole turkey on the grill for Thanksgiving, and he's been doing it for 20-some years, Josh. Can you do that?
Oh, you certainly can. I'll tell you what, that caller was awesome. We can be buddies, you know. My brother-in-law actually made a ham on the grill for Easter 1 year, and I loved it. My wife's not as big of a fan of the smoked things for holidays, so I don't get the opportunity to always do that unless I'm going to make two turkeys, which I've done. But he's got it right there. He's right on the ticket, you know, using a little Weber kettle for you know, mm-hmm. small things, a Smoky Joe, and then your bigger kettle grill for the larger things. But yeah, obviously with that background in professional meat preparation, and that's fascinating. I'd love to chat with him more about that. That's really exciting. You know, he's got to figure it out. Great input.
I kind of want to try now. Thank you, Mike. And we're talking about outdoor cooking with Josh Swanson, executive chef at St. Norbert's College. And if you've got tips and suggestions like Mike, bring them while we've still got time. We'll continue the conversation with your input at 1-800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Recipes available for you at our website at WPR.org/mornings from our guest, Josh Swanson, executive chef at St. Norbert's College in De Pere. Taking your grilling tips and suggestions, outdoor cooking, what do you do and what do you use? Still time for you at 1-800-642-1234. And a quick question for you here before we get back to another recipe that you've given to us this morning, Josh Swanson. Can you actually be a grill master if you don't actually have a meat thermometer?
You can be a grill master without a meat thermometer. I professionally cooked, you know, 30 to 100 ribeyes nightly without a meat thermometer. But I was, you know, repetitive learning. You can kind of actually, you know, you show younger cooks how to temp a piece of meat on their hand. Mm-hmm. You can kind of feel in the palm of your hand the firmness of the meat and how it changes through the cooking process. But that's a learned behavior. And, you know, it really takes somebody that's working professionally doing it to feel pretty comfortable about that. I really strongly recommend for all home cooks to use a meat thermometer. You know, you don't want to be jabbing it in there every 30 seconds. Right. You'll kind of, after you cook a steak with it once or twice, you'll really get it figured out where you kind of know, okay, it's been on there for, you know, about this long. But one of the things I really don't enjoy is when people say, you know, cook to time. Outside of braising a piece of meat, I really think it's a poor method for cooking, you know, the 2 minutes per side. It's not always accurate. Your heat source might be different. Your thickness of your meat might be different. There's so many variables. The thermometer just removes all of those obstacles.
So cooking to temp will always be preferred over cooking to time.
Always cooking to temp is preferred over time. I think you can have a base guideline if you're going to make a pot roast and say, oh, I know I'm going to cook this pot roast for 8 hours in my slow cooker, and that's okay. And that pot roast is just going to be broken down and pork tender, so it doesn't really make that much difference. But you could also stick a thermometer in it and know, okay, when this pot roast hits, you know, 200 degrees, I know that all the connective tissue is finally broken down and it's ready for me to eat. It just gives you a little bit more scientific look at it and just, you know, more accuracy.
So, Josh, tell us about this recipe you have on our website this morning at WPR.org/mornings for chicken souvlaki.
I will actually be making this this weekend for a graduation party.
Oh, wow.
It's a favorite of my family, and it was requested by one of my sister-in-laws. So it's a really fun, easy dish to make. I really like it because it's got a lot of healthy ingredients in it. It's got a bunch of garlic. It's got a bunch of turmeric, you know, and we're using chicken here. I like to use thighs. It's my preferred cut on there, but it works just fine with breast as well. So in the recipe, it just lists 1.5 pounds of chicken, so you can really use whatever you prefer. You want to get crazy with it and use skin on, you can go ahead and do that. And you want to be like me and use a boneless, skinless thigh. That's just kind of how I do it. But we've got a marinade, basically. You make a marinade with olive oil, lemon juice, honey, garlic. I like to go out in my garden and get some fresh oregano and chop it up. Super fun in this time of year. Yep. Perfect summer recipe in that regard. Some turmeric in there, a little bit of salt. And then there's another ninja trick in there. Oh. It's another little ingredient I use called liquid amino. It's available in most of the health food aisles. It's kind of, again, like that soy sauce plus, where it gives you just, you know, just more body to your dish.
And where do you find these liquid aminos? It calls for a tablespoon of this. And so it just gives it a little more push, a little flavor.
Yeah, it gives it an umami depth. It gives it this roundness of flavor that you can't get with just salt alone. So you can get it in any health food aisle. Popular brand would be Bragg liquid aminos. You know, it might be near that Bragg apple cider vinegar, which I also highly recommend.
Sure.
Big fan of apple cider vinegar. I've also got some Aleppo pepper in there too, which is something fun. And that kind of changed the way that you cook a little bit. I use that a lot in place of black pepper. It's not very spicy, but it's got a really kind of fruity pepper flavor to it. So you can use a lot of it and get a spicy thing going. I discovered this making kimchi. There's a similar chili flake called gochugaru that you put in kimchi, and you put a ton of it in there because it makes this beautiful red color, and then it's got this spicy, fiery heat. But it's got a round flavor. It's not like a habanero, you know, where it's just heat, or, you know, now this trend with the scorpion peppers and all that, where it just blows. That's not fun.
Yeah,
you know?
No.
Yeah, I like heat with flavor, and that Aleppo pepper is in there. But again, with this recipe, we use that indirect cooking. Mm-hmm. So you start it over kind of off the fire. You render any of that fat that's on those chicken thighs off, and then you get it over the heat, and you just kind of, you know, this is a great recipe because you can have people over. You can marinate the meat in advance. You put it on skewers. I like to do it on skewers. That's kind of the traditional souvlaki style. You put it on skewers, and then you start it, you know, maybe start the cooking process right before they arrive. You know, a caller suggested that chimney starter. Big fan of chimney starters.
Yep.
Lighter fluid doesn't exist in my home. I don't believe in it. I don't use it. Professionally, I don't use it. You know, a little bit of paper and a little bit of patience, and you can get a fire going real easy, especially if you have one of those chimney starters or, you know, a nice little torch works sometimes as well too.
Got another tip here about chicken. Let's go to Jeremy in Iron River quick. Jeremy, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. Hey, I've learned over the years that, and I've actually been hollered at for my for you, my technique with grilling chicken is the misconception is that you need to fillet your chicken, especially your bone-in thighs, drummies, and your wings. I found you do not fillet the chicken. If you leave the skin up, season it however you want. I just do seasoned salt, pepper, and garlic powder. Leave it skin up. 20 minutes on the grill. It is the juiciest chicken, fall off the bone with, you know, a crispy skin onto it, and you don't lose any of that flavor by flipping it. Flipping it in my house is against the law.
A lot of laws here when it comes to grilling. Jeremy, thank you so much. Josh Swanson, don't flip your chicken?
I mean, that's definitely a method that you can use. I like to do that with bone-in chicken, you know, kind of use that indirect cooking method. And then, you know, it does render that skin and that fat really well. So that is a good way to do it. I do know scientifically, you know, they say with your steaks that you're not supposed to flip them too many times. When it comes to steak, it's actually the opposite. Flip early and flip often when you're on that high heat. You know, with that chicken method, I bet he produces beautiful, juicy chicken every time. That's another thing that's important about grilling. Find your lane, you know, find your lane and what you enjoy, what you want to do, what works for you might not work for somebody else, but you may be able to produce beautiful food time and time again by finding a method or a technique that you enjoy. You know, it might be easier for you, or it just might produce the results that you want to do. That's the best part about grilling. Yeah. You know, nobody's going to tell you what you have to do, can or can't do. You can do whatever you want. You know, and you may, I'd say experiment a little bit, mess up a piece or two of meat and have, you know, have a hard time with it. You're going to learn from your failures more than you're going to learn from your successes. So I'd say if you've never tried anything, if there's a cut that you haven't had, you know, the best thing I can recommend is go to an ethnic market, buy a thing you haven't had before, take it home and try to cook it. If it's not good, you know, you can always run to a restaurant, right?
Yep. Last question I have for you, Josh, and we got about a minute for your answer. How do you maintain your grills?
So I'm big on just kind of burning off, you know, any leftover fat kind of towards the end of the cooking process. I do not scrape my grill when I am done cooking. I scrape it before I start cooking the next time. So I like to start the fire. I get the grill grate on there and then I scrape that grate. I also make sure that I'm removing all the ashes. And then there is such a thing as a too clean of a grill. You want to build up a little bit, especially if you're using propane with those flavor bars. You want to build up a little bit of funk in there so that when you cook, you get that real tasty grill flavor.
We want the funk. Josh Swanson, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm awesome. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I've got a list of things to try out now in my backyard grill, which is also a little smoky. Josh Swanson's the executive chef at St. Norbert College and a grilling guru, as you heard, in his own right. And again, I want to remind you that the recipes that he offered us this morning are available for you anytime, courtesy of Josh Swanson at WPR.org/mornings. We've got the chicken souvlaki up there, as well as that tri-tip recipe, tri-tip and Napa salad. Try it out and let us know what you think. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent this morning, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.